Now, with your GoDaddy.com domain registration, as a listener of The Chris Perillo Show, enter code CHRIS1 and save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
PG, PG-13, R, NC-17, maybe you see a G movie now and then. I'm talking to Kirby Dick. His new movie, This Film Is Not Yet Rated, looks at the MPAA rating system and how it influences and impacts what movies we're able to see. Kirby, why make a film about the rating system?
Well, this system, the film raters who sort of run this rating system, they're anonymous. Nobody has known who these people are, you know, for 30 years. So the people making this decision, we have no idea who they are or how they make their decisions. And that was one of the things that's sort of I found most appalling. And I felt that, you know, it was time the public found out. And I knew it would make a good film following. I hired a PI to find out who these people were. And I knew it would make a good film following this PI to find out this story.
So do you feel like the rating system is biased in any way?
Oh, yes. It's definitely biased. It's biased in a number of ways. It's biased against independent films and foreign films. It seems like films that deal with violence get much less severe ratings than films that deal with sexuality, which is, you know, coincidentally, the films that independent foreign films often, you know, the subject matter that independent foreign films often cover. And it's certainly biased against gay and lesbian films. There's definitely a homophobic sort of aspect built into the rating structure.
Was it difficult to get people to talk to you about this film or to appear in the film?
It was. It was very surprising because the film has a lot of well-known independent filmmakers in, John Waters, Kimberly Pierce, Mary Herron. And I thought, because they, you know, they would be talking about films that they in the past had talked about very publicly. I thought that they'd be very willing to talk to me about this. I mean, I've made films. I knew I had a fairly good reputation. They knew who I was. They knew it was going to be a reputable film. And I was shocked, when so many people were initially hesitant to talk. And I realized that the reason they were is they were afraid if they went on the record in a film of this profile that their future films might get more harshly rated by the ratings board. And, you know, that paranoia, I just did not, it's really unfortunate that it exists in an art form like the film. But even more so, there's even more paranoia within the studio system, because I want to talk to people in the studios too and see what their experience was. And even though many people said, I want to see this film made, the rating system is it's an abominable system, not one person in the studio would go on the record. We had one person go on, but he was in silhouette, and he's in the film. And it's amazing. There's that much fear.
Now, were the studio people, because they are technically members of the MPAA, are they banned from talking, or did they just elect not to speak?
Well, yeah, the MPAA is the trade organization and lobbying arm for the six major studios. These studios are major corporations. There's a kind of a corporate culture there. Corporate culture is obviously, if you want to keep your job, you don't say bad things about what your corporation might be involved in. Or you don't spill the beans at all, really. And so that was it. I mean, it was just, I mean, these people are, corporate animals. And they, even though they, they might agree with the way I think, they don't want to put their jobs on the line. You know, we're talking about a rating system here. You know, we're not talking about Iraq or Gitmo or anything like that. So, I would think that people would at least come forward a little bit. But no, I mean, this is, I guess it shouldn't surprise me. I mean, paranoia and corporate culture go hand in hand.
Now, you mentioned that you used a private investigator for a good portion of the film. How did you go about finding a private investigator? How did you know you had the right private investigator for the job?
Well, we interviewed about six or seven of them. One of the things I found out about PIs is they love their jobs. They're very happy people. None of them seem like they're, they all act like kids. Like this is them, like the dream job. Like we get to, dress up in disguises and pretend we're somebody else and, sneak into places. The person we got, Becky, the reason we hired her, she was just so irrepressible. She was willing to do anything. She, in fact, when we went to interview her, she started working. And we said, wait, you can't go out and start working. We have to film you. This is all about a process of filming. So from now on, before you do anything, you talk to us first because we may want to film it. This was a problem all the way through the film. She was just constantly, trying to work and trying to bust into the system. So I think it was that more than anything else, that, that her willingness just to take on the system, which we knew was going to be very difficult because these Raiders' names had been kept secret for 30 years, you know, 60 Minutes, you know, NBC News. Nobody had been able to crack this, and we knew it was going to be really tough, and it was. I mean, we fortunately got a big break, but it was because of her persistence over many months.
Did the MPAA give you any indication as to why the Raiders themselves are so secreted away?
Well, they say it's to protect them from influence, which is really a ridiculous argument because, first of all, what they're doing is in the public interest. And if it's in the public interest, you know, then the public should know who's making these decisions, just like judges, school board officials. And these judges and school board officials make decisions that, and they seem to be able to deal with all the influence that they, you know, are subject to. But it's ridiculous in another way because in the very people, they're in contact with the very people who have a strong financial interest in influencing them. They're in contact with people from the studios whose job it is to see that the studio films get the ratings that the studios want. And they're in contact with these people on a daily basis, and they've developed relationships with them over years. So even though they say that they're totally protected from influence, in fact, they're exposed to influence from the very people who have a financial interest in influencing them. So it's really completely specious.
Do you think that there are things in particular that influence the ratings? I mean, you've mentioned that there's a bias against independent films and probably against films that are sexual in nature, but do you think there are specific elements that go into films, or is it so nebulous that it's impossible to know exactly what influences the ratings?
Well, there's no standards, so it's very hard. I mean, you know, one of the things I was very surprised at is that all the filmmakers that we interviewed who got an NC-17 thought they had an R rating. I mean, they had seen, these are experienced filmmakers who'd seen many films, and they were surprised as anybody else.
Do you feel like any of the filmmakers gave you an indication that they self-censor the works that they put out as a result of this?
I don't think the filmmakers said that, but I think that was at play. I think it was certainly at play in the way that they shot sex scenes because these filmmakers did not want NC-17s because they knew that an NC-17 rating because they knew that it would limit their box office. And so I think in that way, I think in terms of subject matter, people are afraid of that. I think that, you know, as soon as there's censorship at play, there's self-censorship at play. Otherwise, the censor isn't doing their job. I mean, the best way for a censor to work is to seem to be so powerful that it caused artists to not go up against them. And how do they do that? By, you know, self-censoring.
In some cases, I would think even self-censoring or downplaying some of the content of a movie might actually go against the content of the movie itself. For instance, I know you talked to the director of American Psycho, and having read the Bret Easton Ellis book, the subject matter of the book itself probably deserves something greater than an NC-17 rating. It's probably one of the most graphic books I've ever read. Do you think that maybe on some level, in spite of the monetary motive, that artists should stay true to their material and not censor as a result of just looking for an extra buck?
Well, ideally, that's true. I mean, I want to say American Psycho. I mean, one of the pleasures of making my film was having the opportunity to see that film, American Psycho, again. I mean, I think it's one of the best American independents ever made. It's beautifully done, and, you know, it's great. No, ideally, certainly. I mean, artists, I think, for the most part, don't want to censor their work. But and in some ways, one constantly is making adjustments, you know, to the marketplace. That's fine. To the marketplace, to an open system that everybody's an equal player in, absolutely, that's not a problem. But to an anonymous group of people, you know, in Los Angeles, who are making decisions based on standards that are not published, that, you know, and that are biased against artists, you know, our art filmmakers. No, I don't think that's right.
Would the government make a better censor of movies?
The government's not going to get into it. The government is concerned about child pornography. I mean, the MPAA has always used the government as the boogeyman, as saying, look, if we don't do it, the government will come in. The government, basically the first to, basically the Supreme Court has, in the decisions in the 50s and 60s, basically said that the government cannot censor films unless it has to do with protecting children. And yes, in terms of children, the government would come in if there was pornography at play. But otherwise, They have other things. I think that they got their hands full with other things.
You use a number of clips in the movie from MPAA member productions. How was that possible? This doesn't seem like a film that the MPAA would be on board with at all.
We used something called fair use, which there are certain situations where an artist can use works of a copyright holder without getting their permission. One of them is, one of these situations is something like this, where it's a critique of, for example, the rating system. And in order to critique it, you have to show what films, what films got what ratings and why they did. And so, within, our copyright law, filmmakers and, have the right to do that. And we did that. So we didn't have to pay them. I mean, it's actually even gets a little more interesting because they have in their contracts something saying that if you use their clips, you cannot use them in a film that gets rated NC-17. Now, our film, we knew would be rated NC-17 because it has clips of NC-17 film in. So if we had gone ahead and signed that contract and paid them the money, then they and then released the film, they could have sued us for breach of contract. So that is even another reason. That's why the fair use exists, so that critiques can get out there, even though copyright holders have an interest in not having critiques get out there. So, and I think this is somewhat of a landmark film in that way. I mean, just like Outfoxed, they use fair use as well. And I think more and more documentary filmmakers will be using fair use, I think, over the next few years.
I know that the fair use comes into play a great deal in the tech world that I'm highly involved in, especially in the argument that individuals should be able to make copies of their own DVDs for backup purposes or whatever it is that they want to do with them at home. Do you think that fair use is going to come more into play in the filmmaking process in the future?
Within the documentary world, there really is a campaign to use fair use more often, because what's happened over the last 10 or 20 years is that people have been so scared by the copyright holders. I mean, not only filmmakers, but people who fund movies and the insurers as well, that people have felt that they had to buy every single clip for their film, regardless of whether it was actually eligible to use those clips under fair use. And I think that that's changing now. And I think that people will write about this film and other films as sort of, kind of helping to have that change happen.
So you're doing the festival circuit right now with this film, is not yet rated. What's next for the film?
It's going to be released in September. IFC is going to be releasing the film. And, after that, it'll go to sort of standard DVD. It's coming out unrated. So, then it'll be on IFC television in, I think, next year, early next year.
Is the lack of rating going to hurt the film, do you think?
If it's very successful, I think it will, actually. Yes, but, we don't have a choice. And I don't think they were going to be nice to us and give us an R rating.
Now, with your GoDaddy.com domain registration, as a listener of The Chris Perillo Show, enter code CHRIS1 and save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.